If we're going to encourage New Yorkers and veterans to seek mental health care and speak openly about this, we can't be shy and be scared to talk about our own mental health concerns.
This is SITREP, the New York City Department of Veterans Services podcast, where we aim to inform and inspire by bringing you the stories of New York City veterans, military service members, their families, and civilian supporters. I'm your host, Gabe Ramos, U.S. Marine Corps veteran and Deputy Press Secretary here at DVS. So on today's episode, we chat with Jason Loughran and Kwesi Douglas, both DVS employees and U.S. Navy veterans. We'll talk about the different reasons folks join the military, making a smooth transition out of uniform and finding your next mission, destigmatizing mental health services and the value of peer-to-peer connection, and finding practical housing resources available in New York City. Enjoy the show. All right, so we are here with Jason Loughran and Kwesi Douglas, both DVS employees, Navy veterans. Guys, if you want to just introduce yourself, give us a little bit of story about your backstory.
Thanks for having me, Gabe. This is Jason Loughran. I'm the senior policy analyst for the Housing and Support Services team at DVS. I was actually born here in Queens. I grew up in Long Island and joined the military in 2008, made my way back here, and been serving in the public sector ever since. I was formerly in the Department of Homeland Security. Then after that, the State Department. Found myself here at DVS, giving back to veterans.
Great. Well, we're definitely happy to have you here on the recording today. I mean, obviously, as part of the team. So for those of you who don't know, I call Kwesi Doc. So you'll hear me refer to him as Doc throughout the episode, and he'll tell you a little bit about why I refer to him that way. So Doc, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, I am Kwesi Douglas. I am currently the Director of Digital Services here at DVS. I was born in Trinidad and Tobago, migrated to the United States at around the age of 12, went to high school in Queens, and then joined the Navy shortly after.
All right, so we got two Navy veterans. So I myself am a Marine Corps veteran, so we got three folks from the Department of the Navy here. So Doc, why don't you tell us a little bit about, because we all kind of have our own unique experiences in terms of our military service, right? So we all kind of did different things in the service. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your military experience. What kind of propelled you to enlist in the first place?
So in high school, I went to high school, and I went to John Adams High School in Queens. Towards the end of my high school career, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I knew I needed to get out of New York City. So I went to my guidance counselor talking about what colleges I can go to. My guidance counselor was like, yeah, you're not going to college. You're going to join the military. And so I went and signed up for the Navy. I went to the Navy in 2003, went to boot camp, then went to Corps School in Great Lakes, Illinois.
And Corps School is what?
So Corps School, Hospital Corpsman A School, is your school that you go to learn your job. When I went through it, it was basically a 14-week crash course in nursing. So I went through that. Then I went to Annapolis, Maryland, to the Naval Academy for a short period of time. Then I went to Camp Pendleton, where I learned how to be a Marine and do some combat medicine. And that's where the name Doc comes from.
Very good. Yeah. So that's why I call you Doc. So obviously I'm a Marine. So Navy corpsmen do what exactly? What is the role of a Navy corpsman?
So the Marine Corps being a department of the Navy.
Right, right.
As Marines like to say, the men's department. The Marine Corps doesn't have their own medical personnel or their own medical job specialty. So the Navy augments the Marine Corps and their combat units with medical personnel, hospital corpsmen, who integrate into a Marine unit, do everything that the Marines do, train with them, and then when they go to combat, that corpsman is there basically running around saving lives.
So the corpsmen, the Navy corpsmen are essentially de facto Marines without having to get the haircuts and deal with all the dumb BS that Marines have to deal with.
We still got to get the haircuts. I remember I rocked a medium reg for the longest time, even after I got out of the Navy.
Not bad, not bad. So, Jason, tell us a little bit about your own Navy experience. What brought you into the service in the first place?
Yeah, man. Actually, I was the least patriotic person you'd meet prior to my enlistment. My mother actually was a single parent, so I went away to school at Johnson & Wales University. And
Rhode Island.
Yeah, Rhode Island.
To be a chef?
No, actually, I got a DECA scholarship to go there for marketing. And I'm like, no, that is the amount owed.
You actually owe that to us.
Yeah.
Due tomorrow.
Yeah, so I had to figure out a different way that I was going to achieve my professional goals. So I came back to New York to reassess, take a better look at CUNY and SUNY schools. And quite frankly, there was no better deal out there than the GI Bill. When someone told me about the military as an option and the tuition that it was paying, I thought it was a no-brainer. There was no company out there that was willing to pay me a couple hundred thousand dollars to go to school.
Right,
that's for
yeah,
sure.
For
so.
Sure.
So I joined the military.
Sign me up.
Yeah, I joined the Navy. That I actually wanted to be a Marine, but my mom.
That's what everybody says.
Yeah, we negotiated. my mom thought that I'd be in harm's way if I joined the Marines. So we had a
Doc,
family member in the Navy.
Harm's way, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit.
So I joined the Navy.
So I think that's a good segue into just kind of talking about, you know, the reason that folks have for joining the service, right? So I think one of the prevailing thoughts is that folks either join the service because they're uber patriotic, right? They just they bleed red, white, and blue, and they just want to serve their country and do these great things
America.
That we see in the movies. Yeah, America, F yeah. Or because they're just in dire straits, you know, the judge is telling them it's either jail or the Marine Corps, the Army, the Navy, whatever, right? But there's this whole narrative of folks in between that join the service for myriad reasons, right? So, Doc, you joined mainly because you wanted to get out of New York City, wanted to see the world, wanted to try something a little bit different. Is that an accurate description? Or?
I don't know about seeing the world. So at that time in high school, I was coming to terms with the fact that I was gay. And I knew that living in New York under my parents' roof, I couldn't be who I was.
Right.
So joining the Navy or just going somewhere else besides South Ozone Park, Queens, was what I needed to do at the time.
Yeah.
So, like, it was an option to get away. And
so that was your ticket out of town.
Yeah. And it was also a stupid
idea. Like Springsteen says, it's a death trap, baby.
but I mean,
run.
It was like one of the dumbest ideas because I ran off to the Navy, who had "Don't Ask, Don't Tell."
Right.
It affected the tide.
Yeah, because everybody knows the Navy was the most welcoming place for New York City gays. all right, so we have get me out of Ozone Park, pay for my ridiculous Johnson & Wales bill, right?
Yeah.
And then for me, so I joined, I enlisted. Junior year of high school, so which was 2002, mainly it was brought on by 9/11, right? So I mean, 9/11 was kind of it was a pretty formative experience for a lot of us. So for me, I think, you know, there was an element of patriotism and wanting to do my part and wanting to you know, fulfill some sort of higher calling and service. But I think the main thing really was, you know, when you see that slogan in the Marine Corps, it's the few, the proud, right? It's the uniform. It's all of the pageantry that's associated with being a Marine. And I just wanted desperately to be part of something special, right? So whether it was the Marine Corps, I just wanted to be part of that small, unique club, that fraternity, that they kind of had a special place. It had that prestige associated with it, right? So it was kind of part, I want to serve my country. I want to fulfill this higher calling. I want to do something bigger than myself. But it was also just wanting to be part of that tribe, right? So I feel like we all kind of have a sense of wanting to belong to something. And so that was essentially it for me. So that kind of gives you an idea for the listeners out there of the different motivations that folks have for joining the military in the first place. So we were all in the military around the same time, right? So you, Doc, enlisted in 2003?
Yeah, I went to boot camp in September of 2003.
So September 2003, you were going out to boot camp. I joined in July 2003. I arrived at boot camp, and Jay, you arrived.
Oh, man. I was in November of 2008.
Okay, so
yeah, I was like, I'm pretty sure he came like a little bit after us.
All right, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that you guys were out of it.
But we're all post 9/11, all kind of general same time frame, right? But I think we all kind of unique different experiences that shaped our kind of post military life, right? So if you guys could just talk to me a little bit about, share whatever you want to share about your military experience itself, but let's talk about the transition, right? So this. The purpose is to kind of talk about transition, talk about kind of what got us to where we are now. And so that military service it played a formative role for all of us. Talk a little bit to me about that experience for you, for what was the transition like?
So my last duty station was San Diego, California. San Diego, California is a Navy city. And then Camp Pendleton is a skip and a hop down the I-5. So everywhere you go, there was a military presence in San Diego. Usually when people get out of the military, they tend to stick around the area of their last duty station. I enjoyed San Diego. It was a fun little city. If you've ever been to San Diego, you can't help but fall in love with it. So I didn't want to leave San Diego. And so I got out. Had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew that at the time I wanted to get out of the military. I felt like the Navy and I were going in completely different directions. So I got out, started looking for jobs. That didn't work out. Went back to school for a quick minute. That didn't work out either. And it was just like a lack of direction. So I spent about a year in San Diego. And then decided to move back to New York because I remember I sat down one day and I said to myself, the last time you were motivated to do something or to take the next step, where were you? And I was living at home in my parents' house. So I packed my stuff up, moved back to New York, and got myself back in gear and worked towards getting where I am now.
Yeah, man. Transitioning out of the Navy, pretty simple for me because, like I mentioned earlier, with the objective of getting the GI Bill, I knew when I returned from Afghanistan, I only had, 18 months left on my enlistment contract. So I knew that I could even request an earlier exit as long as I was enrolled and showing proof that I was going to school. So I came back, my early exit was approved, and I came to St. John's University, and as soon as I came back to New York, my family and friends are here, and I kind of just thought that everything was going to be exactly the way I left it in 2008.
Yeah.
And
rude awakening.
Yeah. Yeah, some things changed. Cost of living went up. That was for sure.
In New York City?
Yeah. I discovered that I couldn't afford an apartment in Brooklyn. That was interesting. But even looking for an apartment, being enrolled in St. John's had a plethora of challenges. I had to write to my local Congress member to get them to support my request for my GI Bill benefits to come in. Because now I was looking at 5 to 6 weeks that I had already been in New York out of service and not receive any type of financial help to get me an apartment to even show proof of income for me to live anywhere.
Yeah.
So I was calling up all my friends, asking them how big their couches were.
Right.
So So I finally got something. The money finally came in, and I thought, you know, no problem. That money would be coming in, and I'd be able to afford rent. But it was still really challenging to get a landlord to accept that as proof of income. So I crashed with my friends for a while until I found a job. Luckily, my secret clearance got me into the State Department. I didn't even reach out to the State Department. The contractor reached out to me one day.
You got recruited.
Yeah. Yeah. On, I think it was one of those recruitmilitary.com or USA Jobs, one or the other. But I put my information up there, and some guy reached out to me, and I thought it was spam at first. Because I was like, how does this guy even know I have a secret clearance?
Yeah, you thought it was a Nigerian prince asking for money.
Yeah, exactly. So found myself employed, but that made it so much harder for me to go to school full time and finish my degree while working full time. But I had to do what I had to do to get recognized as a tenant who can pay their rent. So that definitely plays a role into why I'm passionate about the work we do here.
Oh, what a perfect segue.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So you guys kind of have like your own unique, obviously, transition experiences, but we're all obviously currently working here at the Department of Veteran Services, right? So I think we all have different reasons, just as we did for initially entering the service. We all kind of had different things that brought us here. But I think one of the through lines is whether we're consciously aware of it or not, is that desire to want to serve in some form or fashion, in some capacity, right? You feel like you have a certain set of skills, right? You have a certain ability, a certain amount of knowledge and talent. And rather than perhaps pursuing it in the private sector, making tons of money, you're here in the public sector working for a municipal agency, giving back to your fellow brothers and sisters who served in uniform. So if you could talk to me a little bit about what got you to DVS, and kind of what inspired you to do your public service, essentially, to continue that life of service, and just about what your role is now, what you're doing. So, Jay, you talked about how that kind of scrounging for money, right? So you had to address your congressman at one point, and how that's kind of been pretty formative for you. So talk to me a little bit about how that's influenced your work here at DVS and what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So it actually just didn't end there. It never ends. You know, many times I've had to work with my school to make sure that all my bills and money owed to the school or university was paid for. And it was a constant administrative struggle to try to get some of these things done. And then just when I thought that I was in the clear, the apartment that I did live in with two of my roommates, friends of mine that I grew up with, our landlord told us one day that he sold the house. And I thought, all right, no big deal. You know, is my rent going up? That's the only question I have. And the new landlord came in. They actually live overseas, so didn't really talk to them much. I was always talking to like their cousin or a cousin's cousin or somebody that's representing them. So it was kind of really fishy to begin with.
Right.
And they told us, hey, you know, you guys have to be out of here in 30 days because we're gonna demo the whole building and turn it into, you know, twice as many apartments as you guys have in there.
So just put you out on the street, essentially.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, I'm a good civilian, you know, I'm a good citizen here in New York City. I'm going to do what's right by this guy and let them do what they have to do. So, you know, in 30 days, we had to figure out how to find a new apartment, put together the money that we'll need to pay a broker, because we all know that money is going to be at least a couple thousand dollars. And it was tough. It was tough. And looking back at it, I learned that we didn't have to go. I didn't know my rights as a tenant. So a lot of situations like that encouraged me to come work at DVS, especially in the housing and support services line of action, because I know how much of a struggle it is for veterans and non-veterans to find an apartment here, understand their own rights. And
because there's a lot of gaps in knowledge, right, about folks. But like you said, both veterans and non-veterans, I mean, the housing market in New York City is, you know, it's one of the toughest, if not the toughest in all the country. And so just folks really just don't know what is available to them and how do they go about navigating the system, right? So how do you in your current role and how does the Housing Supportive Services team, how do you make that easier for folks?
Yeah, so I feel very honored to be a part of this team because our focus very much is on helping veterans find permanent housing for those who, you know, ended up dealing with one larger bill than expected or a plethora of different issues that lead them to some kind of financial burden where they result in a shelter. Our team helps them find permanent housing, moves them out of shelter, and gets them back on their feet to a better life again, them and their families. And we also provide aftercare and prevention services for people who are at risk of homelessness. And here in New York City, I think we can confidently say that majority of the people renting are only one incident, one financial event.
Catastrophic incident, right, where away from really struggling.
Yeah. From possibly being in that situation.
Yeah.
Unless you have a good credit score and instead you choose to collect more debt just to get yourself out of that situation. But really,
which a lot of folks generally end up having to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're just creating this bigger bubble of personal loans out there and credit cards that are really just kind of cushioning the blow and preventing people from entering the shelter system. But we here at DVS, we're trying to figure out ways to prevent that from happening and to create more economic opportunities for veterans and educate them on their financial resources here in New York City, you know, taking advantage of financial empowerment centers that the Department of Finance offers. People need to know about these resources so that they can utilize them and get them into a better situation.
Absolutely. So also, DVS for the most part has been fairly successful, right? So obviously veteran homelessness is one of the biggest challenges, you know, for government on all levels, for the public space, for the private space. But DVS, obviously we're only, you know, we're in year three of operations. We just recently began, but we've had some good success. What do you think has been one of the most successful aspects of the program? What has been one of that secret sauce to the Housing Supportive Services team?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it's our peer-to-peer model. Our veteran, we call them our veteran peer coordinators, and these this incredible team of four, right now three, but it's usually four to five people who have strong connections to the military community, speak our language.
Yep.
Kind of what they do in such a short amount of time for the 3 years of us being in service. We've moved out hundreds of veterans into permanent housing, over 600, reducing veteran homelessness by 90%. I mean, that's not just us. That's
right.
In partnership with NYCHA, DHS, HPD,
all the SSVFs. There's a lot of different partnerships across
absolutely
the public and private space. But definitely, I think that peer relationship, you know, it's really key to just getting folks to resources, right? So maybe folks know about certain things, but they don't necessarily avail themselves to it just because they don't see the advocacy, they don't see the value of it until somebody who's been through that experience kind of says, walks them through that process, right?
Absolutely. I actually have a very personal experience like that just here in DVS with our colleague here, Kwesi.
Please do tell.
Yeah. Kwesi introduced me to a resource offered by the Headstrong Foundation.
Yeah, right? Headstrong Project. Yeah, of course.
Yes. So,
am I familiar with them? Yeah. How did you find about them, Kwesi?
I found out about them through you.
it's a lovely cycle of peer-to-peer success.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about Headstrong, Doc?
So I got introduced to the Headstrong Project. When I came into DVS, I was originally working in what used to be our whole health line of action, which was focused on veterans' health. There was culture, peer-to-peer connection, community, and mental health treatment. So I came in touch, I met the folks at the Headstrong Project through that line of action, but got more information and I want to say testimony from Gabe.
Testify!
Gabe was very familiar with the Headstrong Project and even at one point said, "Doc, you need to go see the Headstrong Project. You need to go get some therapy." And I pushed him off for a couple months, almost a year, and then finally was like, "All right, yeah, let's do this." So went and started going through the process, and it was a really effective process for myself. And then when Jason came on board, just in conversation with him, I saw that he could also benefit from talking to someone at the Headstrong Project. So
as we all can, and let's be honest, right? This isn't just a post 9/11 veteran specific thing, right? So any and everyone should avail themselves to mental health services. I think that, you know, it's so often there's such a stigma associated with talking to somebody and seeking out therapy, and especially within the veteran community, it's like, oh well, you know, the next guy or the next gal had a worse experience than me, so I'm not necessarily deserving of this, right? Or I don't necessarily, you know, somebody else has had it worse, so I shouldn't have to access this. But I mean, we all, regardless of what our military experience or even just life experience has been, could benefit from talking to somebody. And an organization like Headstrong, which makes it so easy to just be able to access their services, I think, you know, all communities could definitely benefit from something like that.
Well said, brother.
And so for the listeners that don't know what Headstrong is basically, it's this great nonprofit here in New York City and across the country, actually, that provides cost-free, stigma-free, bureaucracy-free mental health care to post 9/11 veterans. Really easy process. You go to their website, getheadstrong.org, essentially just say, "Hey, I'm in need of mental health care," and they will reach out to you generally within 12 to 24 hours, schedule an intake. You could be in your first session with your therapist within a week. So they don't ask for proof of military service. They don't ask for discharge form. They don't ask you to go through all the hoops that a lot of municipal federal agencies you end up having to go through. So definitely really a good resource for folks to access, which, you know, and one of the things we're doing here at DVS is just trying to take the stigma away from accessing mental health care services, right? So you have three perfect example of employees who are doing great things here at the agency, availing themselves to these different resources throughout the city, you know, tying into the New York City's overall Thrive NYC initiative of trying to destigmatize mental health care and make, you know, change the conversation around what it means to access mental health care, and just trying to reframe that conversation. So I think this will hopefully go a long way in doing that.
Excuse me. And I think that's been like one of the best parts about working at DVS, because coming into DVS, I guess a little bit of a caregiver mentality from being a corpsman, and that's another podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
But just coming in, and prior to working at DVS, I worked at a holistic services clinic. So when I got recruited to work at DVS, called to work at DVS, and the commissioner and the interview panel pitched to me what DVS was getting ready to do, I definitely was like, "I want to be a part of this. How do I sign up?" And coming in here, one of the terms that was thrown around for about the first 6 months of me working here was that in this line of action, this agency, as a part of the Thrive Initiative, we need to be mental health champions. And it was, how are we going to be mental health champions when I myself couldn't speak openly or address my own mental health concerns?
Right.
So Gabe and I would talk about mental health concerns, but that would be the extent of it. 2 years ago, me having this conversation on a podcast would have definitely not happened.
Right.
Yeah. But after having more of that conversation, and then one time having a meeting at City Hall and getting up in front of a room of people and just saying, "Hey, you know, my name's Kwesi Douglas and I suffer from PTSD. And everyone in the room kind of like went ghost white. They're like, "Oh my God, did he just say that?"
Right. Yeah.
And it was just like, yeah, like If we're going to encourage New Yorkers and veterans to seek mental health care and speak openly about this, the people that are selling it to them, we can't be shy and be scared to talk about our own mental health concerns.
Absolutely.
So,
hoorah.
That was like one of, that's been like.
Should we cut that?
No, that's staying in.
You guys are the worst. That's been like, I want to say, one of my most rewarding parts of working at DVS is being able to address and talk about mental health concerns openly, being able to talk about it with my peers, being able to talk about it with my friends and with complete strangers.
Well, it's like they say, you know, daylight is the best disinfectant, right? And so what's being disinfected? It's that stigma. It's that shame. It's that need to not talk about it and to feel like you have to hide this aspect of you. And it's not just mental health concerns, right? It's about mental fitness, right? So we do things to address our own kind of overall health and fitness. It's about being mentally fit. And it's about saying, hey, you know what? I'm struggling with something. Let me get this conversation out of my head that's haunting me 24 hours a day and just get it out and talk to somebody else, right? Let me talk about these things that are kind of bringing me down or things that I'm anxious
about.
True,
man. I kind of think of it like exercise. You know, I'm going to hit the gym a couple times a week, but it's good to hit therapy once a week. Yeah. You got to exercise
that too.
more than that. Yeah, definitely.
Gabe always said you got to do the work.
It's true.
Yeah, put the work in.
I really felt like the most success I got from the program was just the normalizing things.
Yeah.
The way that it normalizes things that we talk about that we think maybe we're just dealing with. I think that you're the only one that's really struggling or that you're not powerful enough or strong enough to get through this.
Right.
That's really gone a long way. And speaking to your point, Quasi, it really is just
it's
educating,
it's demystifying it. It's saying, hey, this is what it is. This is what you're experiencing. This is the way that your brain works, essentially. And let's get better. That's all it is. Well, gents, I think we're running out of time. We're definitely going to have you guys back on to continue the conversation. I really thank the both of you for being here. I love you both, not just as colleagues and coworkers, but as friends. So definitely thank you so much for being here. One of the things that we do at the end of each show is we ask folks a couple questions. So this will be no different. So to the both of you, if there's one thing you'd like every New York City veteran to know, what would that be?
So I'm going to cheat a bit. I would say there's two things I want New York City veterans to know. So when I moved back to New York City, I had no idea there was an office in New York City dedicated to helping veterans. So I would want New York City veterans to know that DVS exists and we are here to assist them. That said, my second thing that I would want New York City veterans to know, and especially veterans that are around my age that were in the military around the same time as myself and Gabe, like when we went in, the guys that were above us, while they were only like 2-3 years older than us, they were from a completely different generation of the military. They were with the guys that are like, you don't talk about it. You put hand sanitizer in your eye if you get pink eye.
Right.
You don't go to medical. Like you
dirt
don't,
on it.
Yeah, you don't address any of that stuff. And a lot of the guys my age, not even mental health concerns, but just general, like they had a bum knee from hiking all the time in the military. They've never gotten that addressed at the VA.
No.
They've never gotten that addressed, period. They're just walking around in pain daily. And one thing that I do want veterans, male and female veterans, because women serve too, is that...
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah, we got a lot of female veterans in our office. You don't need to suffer in silence. Like, there are people and resources out there. If you don't want to go to the VA, there's resources outside of DVS. There's resources outside of the VA. You can come to DVS or there are websites out there that can help you. That you can get access to different resources to take care of any issue that you have. You don't need to suffer in silence, and definitely reach out to your buddies if you need help.
Well said.
Yeah.
What do you got?
I'm gonna keep this short because I think Q really hit that, Doc. We want to hear from you. And I don't mean just reviewing on this, wherever this podcast gets posted, or specifically DVS, come in, introduce yourself, tell us what you're doing now. We're a small enough community that I feel like united we can be a lot stronger. And much like what Quasi was saying, you know,
campaign slogan.
That's right. Yeah, maybe it is.
Oh my goodness.
Well, we're definitely stronger together. And
absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Come say what's up. Introduce yourself. I'd love to hear from you. The community of veterans and all the things that I hear about what some vets accomplish on their own is incredible. And even if you didn't accomplish or you don't think you accomplished anything yet, you should still come in and introduce yourself and see how we can work together and help you achieve your goals and dreams and whatever you want to aspire to do in your life.
And if there is one thing you'd like every non-veteran or New Yorker not directly connected to the military to know, what would that be?
There are in New York, the one thing that I want New York's non-veteran New Yorkers to know, there is more than one branch of service. The Army is not the only branch of service.
Right? Everybody's in the Army. Everybody's a soldier.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, you went away to the Army. No, I went away to the Navy. Yeah, same thing. No, we're completely different branches of service. And, you know, sometimes the Navy and the Army don't really get along.
No.
But, yeah, there's more than one branch of service.
That's a good start. What about you, Jay?
I'd want to tell everybody that no matter what they think, that service member who just returned from serving wherever or for what branch, how they're doing or what they might think that they're not dealing with, you should reach out to them and ask them to grab some lunch together or go out to dinner or grab a drink. I think far too often we get wrapped up in social media and we think that just by liking a post on Facebook or you know, sending a message on Instagram is good enough. Yeah, it's definitely fine. You know, it's good that we're all keeping connected on the World Wide Web, but you know, it'd be nice to connect in person. I think even
step outside your house to go talk to somebody in real life.
That's right. We need to get out there and start interacting with one another again. It'll help our mental health, build relationships. Give each other a hug.
Absolutely.
I'm going to give you a hug after this.
Let's
for all those nice things you said about me.
Yeah, no, I think that's really well said, Jay. So obviously we still want to connect with folks via social media and on the internet too, where there's a lot of information readily available for people. So for more information, you can connect with us on Facebook or Twitter at NYC Veterans or on our website, www.nyc.gov/vets. Are you guys on social media? Do you guys have any handles you want to put out there? Or you got those private accounts?
I'm at Quasi Douglas on Twitter.
So Twitter at Quasi Douglas to chat with Doc and Jason Lochran. Are you on social media? Or are you off the grid?
You can email Jason at his DVS email or find him on the DVS website. Oh, your LinkedIn.
Oh yeah, well, I don't know about LinkedIn handle.
All right. So we'll
say find me on LinkedIn.
Hit me up on LinkedIn.
All right, so we have Doc at Quasi Douglas on Twitter, and Jason is, you can find him on LinkedIn. He's a little bit off the grid on social media. Yeah. And that's it for now. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thanks, brother. Cheers. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.